still early, actually. So good morning, everyone. It's a real pleasure to be here, and a real privilege, actually, to be representing a cross-departmental team from the Cambridge Health Alliance. And I'd just like to acknowledge one of our team members who's here, Dr. Robert Marlin. And basically, what I'm going to be talking to you today is about language service quality improvement and the use of a tool in the electronic medical record to do so. And I have no relationships to disclose. So, three main objectives for today's presentation. First, I want to explain why it's important to do documentation of how limited English proficient or LEP patients' language needs are met in each clinical encounter. And then I want to share some lessons learned from developing and institutionalizing a tool in the electronic medical record for such documentation. And then finally, I want to discuss some ways to use this data from such a documentation tool to improve language services. So just a little bit about us. The Cambridge Health Alliance is an academic public healthcare system serving quite a diverse patient population by a variety of indicators. But just to give you a sense of our language diversity, last year, a little over a third of our outpatients spoke a language other than English. And the most frequently spoken languages are Portuguese, Spanish, and Haitian Creole. And that actually reflects our catchment area in terms of census data. And to serve this very multicultural population, we have quite a robust multilingual services department that provides both interpreting, mostly in face-to-face and phone modalities, and translation services. And the interpreting is offered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we received some funding from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to improve the quality and availability of language services for LEP patients through the Speaking Together National Language Services Network. And we actually received some supplemental funding after the Speaking Together was ended to continue the work that we began under Speaking Together. So I just want to spend a quick moment to talk about the research on the impact of language barriers on healthcare. And basically, this is just kind of the tip of the iceberg in terms of what the research is, but just to give you a flavor, language barriers between patients and their caregivers have been associated with lower likelihood of receiving preventive services like cancer screenings, staying in hospitals longer, and this was a Joint Commission-sponsored study, adverse events that involve physical harm. And so LEP patients without competent language assistance, and I'll talk a little bit more about what that is in a moment, are more likely to report lack of understanding medication instructions, receiving less health education, and being less satisfied with their care as compared to LEP patients who do receive language assistance and English-speaking patients. And so basically, this research reflects that LEP patients without language assistance can't really fully participate in their care in terms of asking questions, understanding risks, and giving informed consent, and actually adhering to treatment. And so it really is a social justice issue in terms of providing language assistance for LEP patients. So hospitals who receive federal funding are required to provide competent language services free of charge. And in terms of who's able to provide that competent language assistance, it's trained and tested interpreters, clinicians who are fluent in the patient's language, and I should also add, demonstrate that proficiency in some kind of assessment, and bilingual staff who are trained and tested in medical interpreting. But in contrast, there are ad hoc interpreters, bilingual staff, family members, or friends who are untrained in interpreting who are more likely to commit errors. And there's increasingly, in terms of documentation, a common practice to document the preferred language of care in terms of spoken and written languages for patients, and also the provision of interpreter services. But for our project, we wanted to move beyond those best practices and actually document how LEP patients' language needs were met for each clinical encounter. And that means obtaining a complete record of all forms of language assistance. So that includes understanding the contribution of bilingual staff or clinicians, and then also hopefully addressing the use of ad hoc interpreters. And we really want to capture the complexities involved in meeting language needs, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. And then we also wanted to kind of harness the power of the electronic medical record to make the documentation quicker, easier, standardized and required for our clinicians. And then finally, we wanted to obtain some reports to make data readily usable for quality improvement. In addition, we wanted to institutionalize this documentation tool across all of our ambulatory sites. And then, and this is the kind of golden ticket here, so use the data from the tool for quality improvement to ensure that patients' language needs are met safely. So basically, just to sum up, we feel that quality improvement is driven by data, and we only get data from documentation. So this is actually a screenshot of the tool. And we use Epic at CHA. And just to quickly walk you through this very basic tool, basically the patient's language of care automatically flows from their registration information. And if the patient's language of care is not English, then the next question, which is language needs met by, is required. Which basically means that the clinician cannot close the chart unless they've actually answered that question. If the language of care is English, then they don't even need to go into this module. And then they get the drop-down options, which I'll go over in a moment. A few other things to highlight. Clinicians are actually able to select multiple options, and that kind of gets at some of the complexity that I'm talking about. In a visit, you could start off with a clinician trying to use their Spanish and then realizing that they need an interpreter midway through. And then finally, if the clinician just so happens to forget to answer this question and they try to close the chart, there's a friendly little reminder that pops up with a little link that brings them here to actually do the documentation. And this is what I just quickly went through. So I just want to spend a little time on the response options, and I cannot tell you how long we as a team spent developing these response options. And I think we were guided mostly by principles that I described as SEC. So first, we wanted options that were straightforward. And what I mean by that is options that, that the clinician could easily understand just by reading the option. They didn't need a further explanation. We wanted the options also to be easy to select. And so as you'll notice, most of the response options begin with different letters, except for the face-to-face and friend or family. And so basically, if the clinician just wants to click the first letter of the option, then they can easily select. And then finally, we want to be comprehensive. And as you can see here, this tries to get at all the possible options, even the ones that are not optimal, like friend or family. Because as I said, we really want to know what's actually happening on the ground. So this has been only possible with some really strong partnerships between departments, mainly the community affairs, the multilingual services department, and our IT group, as well as clinicians and staff. And we have a working group that meets every month to do all this work. In addition, we have a larger stakeholder group across CHA that includes quality management, ambulatory and IT leadership, and representatives from all the ambulatory departments who are doing this documentation. Just to give you a sense of the process, we basically began developing this tool in the summer of 2007, and then by 2008 we had a tool to actually pilot, and we actually spent a little over a year and a half to actually pilot a tool to get all those features that I talked about. All were a direct result of feedback from our clinicians who were piloting. And then we, at the same time, were trying to get buy-in from the organization to do the rollout. So we were talking to a lot of leaders, and that's where we engaged all the stakeholders. And then finally, last October, we were able to do the rollout to CHA-wide. So just to give you some sense of the data, this is representative data from this past summer, and this is aggregated across all sites. We actually have a report that comes out monthly that breaks it out by site. And as you can see here, English used effectively by patient and provider proficient in the patient's language are the most frequently used options, followed by the interpreter options, and then finally friend or family as well. And I should say that this pattern of responses has been stable for about like 10 months or so. So we're getting consistent results from month to month. So just really quickly, just to go over some of the questions that are raised by the data, we decided to focus in on three response options that we felt had most sort of implications for patient safety. And what we're doing actually now is we're finding that a little bit of information is a little dangerous. Like, we want to know more, so we're actually going to the sites and talking to them and trying to engage them in a partnership to kind of figure out what are the reasons for these response options and developing some solutions together. And some of these questions, and depending on the answers of these questions, we can work on some solutions. So first, what are the criteria by which clinicians are determining effective use of English? So for some visits, in LEP patients, English might be sufficient. It might be something routine. But something a little bit more complicated that requires consent might need more. So how are clinicians determining that? How accurate is the patient language of care information? If you might recall, that drop-down or the tool basically depends on accurate language of care information, since things flow in automatically. So working through processes to make sure that the information is accurate. For friend or family, why are friends or family being used? Are there barriers on the patient's side? Do the patients not know that these services are being provided free of charge? Do they not understand the risks associated with having friend or family or untrained people do interpreting? And also on the provider side, are there barriers in terms of perceiving delays related to, you know, getting qualified interpreters? And then finally, provider proficient in the patient's language. The big question is, are they actually proficient? And how do we go about determining that? And so we've been doing some groundwork actually with the last clinician proficiency question, piloting some tests, identifying a test, and trying to explore what could be done in terms of institutionalizing testing. And I have to say, there are a lot of barriers to that, so we're still trying to explore that a bit more. So really quickly, the benefits, I hope you can see that this is easy and quick to use, and it provides documentation of compliance with regulatory requirements. It makes possible regular reports with data that are consistent and complete. And this is data that can be used for quality improvement, for planning purposes, and then also in the future, we're really hoping to do some research projects that examine the impact of language services on patient clinical outcomes. Some challenges: we're still trying to figure out the quality of the data. We know that it's stable, and we've actually compared it to some interpreter database data, so we know that the interpreter information matches up. So the question is, how can we validate all of the other options? And we're still trying to struggle through that. Also, this has been something a little bit contentious for some of these busy clinicians who really don't want extra clicks. And we do understand the impact of having to document for each LEP encounter, but we need to understand that every encounter is unique, and we need to understand that. And then also the impact on clinicians who are seeing a high proportion of LEP patients. So working through ways to make the tool even easier for the clinicians so that it lessens the burden. So quickly, some lessons learned. We really found that this was only possible through the engagement of a wide network of stakeholders to get the necessary organizational buy-in. And this was really possible through identifying and working with key departmental champions. We have a great champion in IT, nursing informatics, who made this all work. And then spending the time to do some piloting to just make sure that you worked through all the kinks in the system. And then instituting a feedback loop that doesn't end when you pilot, doesn't end when you roll it out, but actually is throughout. You know, now we're still getting feedback from the clinicians that we want to use to improve the tool. So I just want to acknowledge our funder, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, our fantastic EPIC team, our quality management liaison, the East Cambridge Health Center, where we piloted NCHA clinicians and staff. So thank you very much. Yeah.